From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in a high school English class, May 2013 at Mendon High School. Now, on any given day, students will read essays, book reports, make presentations, share their analysis of books or poetry. So when Megan Norton, 14 years old, walked to the front of her class, could have been a normal, unremarkable event on most days, but this time was different. Megan had written a composition entitled The Continuous Nightmare, and she read it to her class, describing something that most of her classmates could not imagine. Megan's mom, at the age of just 43, had been diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. In just months, Megan's life had gone from sort of this happy routine setting to one, in many ways, of chaos and lack of understanding. The neighbors had noticed that something had been changing with Amy Norton months and even years before. Amy had become withdrawn or would tell the same story a couple of times. And the diagnosis of Alzheimer's at age 43 was a shock, the typical assumption that this is a disease for the aging population. Well, since then, Megan and her dad, Brian, have done their part to take the fight to Alzheimer's. They're going to head the Walk to End Alzheimer's in Mendon next month, and they are here in studio now to share their story. Brian and Megan Norton, welcome to Connections. Brian, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Megan, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And also in studio is Teresa Galbiere, the president and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association of Rochester and the Finger Lakes region. Teresa, thank you for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
I will start right with Megan. You were 14 when mom was diagnosed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what you knew at the time? I mean, we're going back. Your mom was diagnosed in March of 2013, so maybe about a year and a half ago. Do you remember at the time how much you knew about Alzheimer's?
I didn't really know very much. It kind of wasn't something that crossed my mind. It was more like, I guess, like something that I never thought would come to this family.
Yeah, and so... So, Brian, this is something that by the time of the diagnosis... we'll get to that in a second. Let's go back a few years because you started to notice a few things happening over the last several years.
Right. My mother-in-law passed away from cancer about 5 years ago now. And it was shortly after that that we started to notice some changes, really thinking it was more along the lines of Amy being impacted by her mother's passing. Friends started to notice her being more withdrawn as well. And over time, that really went from being withdrawn to starting to put things away in cabinets where she wouldn't have put things previously, having some issues navigating the car at times. And I think the surprising thing to me was when our son, Justin, who's now 12, one day mentioned to me that he was actually helping her navigate home from his lacrosse practices. I think that's kind of the eye-opening moment that we saw, that we knew something else was going on. And we had been to several different doctors looking at different potential reasons for her actions. Wasn't until we met with a psychologist who instantly said we need to go meet with a neurologist. And that's kind of what led to the diagnosis.
Now, leading up to that point, when these things are happening, in your own mind, you know something's up. But I would suspect, you know, your wife is in her early 40s. You're not thinking Alzheimer's.
No. In fact, you're probably feeling more frustration with, geez, what's happening? You know, why suddenly?
Did you verbalize it with her? Did she know?
She knew at times we'd be frustrated by certain things happening, maybe being preoccupied with something at home and not really doing some of the things she always did, interacting with the kids or working with them on homework, which she was always enjoyed doing, and things of that sort. So there was frustration initially. You look back on that now and you wonder, boy, that's kind of hard to think that I was frustrated by something that was going on that she had no control over, and now, you know, I think it's the complete opposite.
Yeah, but how many people think Alzheimer's in their early 40s? Sure. So in your own mind, was it part of, you know, sort of that old joke about you turn 40 and, well, you start forgetting things, or, you know how we kind of stereotype it.
Mm-hmm.
And in your own mind, was that maybe part of the explanation?
No, I don't think that really came into the fact. I think it was really more of her mom passing away. We lived in Atlanta at the mm-hmm. time, and her mom was in New Jersey. Her family was in New Jersey. And really just thought it was tied into depression associated with her mom passing.
Okay.
And that really, I think, was the road we went down for so long until we finally got to the neurologist.
So the neurologist said you need to do what exactly?
The neurologist that we had in Atlanta was fantastic, and he took a very aggressive plan of having Amy go through all the testing, instantly started her on medications that Alzheimer's patients will start with, and really just, you know, said, hey, it's going to be a long road, and, you know, we're here to help however we can.
Can you describe what you thought when the first time it became clear that it was Alzheimer's? I mean, when you were told, were you sitting down with her, and did you, at that point, by then, had you suspected, or did you know?
When we went through the process of all the testing, there is that wondering, is it something like that? I guess even to some extent, I was hoping that we would have some answer, that if it was just depression, you know, at times I was thinking that might be harder to figure out how to resolve or, mm-hmm. or deal with. So I guess on one hand, you're hoping to get an exact answer for what's wrong. And on the other hand, there was that, gee, I hope it's not something more serious. You know, it could be a brain tumor. It could be anything. And it wasn't until we went back to meet with him in his office when all the testing was done that he said, you know, looking at the scans and so on, that the diagnosis is early onset Alzheimer's.
What goes through your mind at that moment?
I think it's like any time anybody receives a diagnosis for something they're not expecting, it's the shock. What are we going to do? Oh, no. The first few nights were not knowing really what we were going to do. What about Megan and Justin? How are we going to get through this? This is not going to be a, you know, long road. It is an uncertain road. So after that initial shock, I think that's when it set in that we probably couldn't stay in Atlanta. We had great friends in Atlanta, but all of our family is in the Northeast, and Megan and Justin were going to need a lot more than just our friends and me. So we made that decision to move back here.
Megan, when you're 14 years old and your parents tell you about this diagnosis, do you immediately start Googling? Do you do research? Did you feel yourself withdrawing? I mean, what did you do?
It was kind of like a shock at first. It was kind of like I kind of knew what it was, but I didn't really associate it with somebody who's young. It was kind of like more, I thought it was like, we said it was like an old person's disease. But now that you think about it, there are so many other people that are young that have this disease, so it's kind of like, now you know what's really going on.
Yeah. If you have, our listeners, if you have questions or comments about Alzheimer's, we'd love to hear from you. It's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Teresa, how common is early onset or not common?
Evan, early onset is very rare. It's less than 1% of the population of people that have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease in this country. And yet we are seeing more and more people coming through our organization who have been affected. And early onset is diagnosed for anybody under the age of 65, because age is still the single biggest risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. So 65 is when you start seeing that the risk factor continues to increase until you get to about 85.
Brian, it sounds like you didn't, it sounds like you went into action mode pretty quickly. You know, some people may kind of go into denial about it, going, you know, 43 years old, it can't be Alzheimer's. You know, that can't be right. But it sounds like you moved pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to ignore test results, PET scans, MRIs, clinical examinations. So I guess I accepted that fully because of what those scans show. I think maybe fear is what pushed us into making such an immediate action. It was March. School in Atlanta ends up in late May. And Megan was starting ninth grade. Our son Justin was starting sixth grade the following year. So really it was, we need to do something if we're going to do it, and we need to do it right away. And that was the decision to move.
So when you write this essay, The Continuous Nightmare, I mean, that's a harsh assessment, but I know it's very honest. What did you write about?
I kind of wrote about like what the feelings kind of flooded into me when I first found out about it. But I think after writing that and being here for almost over a year now, mm-hmm. it's for the best. But I think, honestly, it's better up here. I have so many good friends this, like, my soccer team, my high school soccer team is really helping.
And you so feel support.
Yeah. And I think it's good being up here. I think it's worth the move.
Well, I think everybody's glad to hear that you feel support and you feel mm-hmm. Dad, you feel the same way?
You know, we're very happy that Megan and Justin have adjusted so quickly to Rochester. I grew up here, so it is a little bit familiar, but we had been away for 20 years. I think the hardest thing, really, that I'm recognizing about the disease is how isolating it is. Mm-hmm. We have our family support, support with coworkers and things of that sort, but we left behind all of our friends that we had developed over 10 years in Atlanta, and that's the hard part, is that you become very isolated. Amy's not comfortable as much in social settings as she was before. She has a little more limitations in what we can and cannot do. So we don't always get to attend Megan's soccer games, or we don't always get to mingle with other family members and parents at different things. So it has worked out very well for us because Megan and Justin have the support and the extra nurturing that they need mm-hmm. As kids. And I think that's probably the best part of it. For Amy and I, it's an adjustment, but it's part of what we needed to do.
I promise, Megan, I promise the last winter was not normal. You know, I mean, I know Dad probably said the same thing. It was pretty brutal, but obviously you're facing a lot worse. Before we talk a little bit more broadly about Alzheimer's, I want to grab our first call. This is Carlette in Rochester. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm Carlette with Nisi. Some of you may have known me. My mother has early onset, similar to Megan's. Mom, Amy, and I just want to say, Megan, you're very courageous, and I admire you greatly. I've been dealing with this 15 to 20 plus years, so I've pretty much been through everything you're going to go through. And if you have any questions, please feel free to contact me. My number, they have it at the local chapter, mm-hmm. Rochester chapter. You can get it from Kelly Harris Street. They have it. Everyone has it. My cell phone number to contact me. But anyway, I just want to say, all hope is not lost. We're at a turning point in this country. And now that we have the National Alzheimer's Project Act in place, and we have council meetings going on at various times during the year, there is hope and there is progress. It's not to the degree that it needs to be, but it's there. And by pushing ahead, Megan, you are forging the way for the future so that people behind you do not have to suffer as you're going to emotionally have to suffer and you'll see your mom suffer. However, I do want to remind you as well to make sure you remember to look at what your mom can do, not what you can't. So try not to keep her out of social situations if you can. Try with my mom. I was pretty much in the same boat as your end, maybe even worse. I had no diagnosis, so she was already in moderate stages. And I had to learn everything myself. And I got proactive. I got online. I read books. I educated myself. I did research. I got in contact with the local chapter. I got involved. I did everything I could, and I educated myself so that I could be proactive and be an advocate and get involved in her care and learn. Learn what the doctors know. You don't have to be in the medical field to be knowledgeable. The more knowledge you have, the more power you have, and you can give your mom the quality of life that she deserves for longer the more that you know.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate that. And, you know, I'm sure, Brian, in many ways it rings true for you. You touched on how Amy's doing a little bit. How would you describe how she's doing today?
You know, I think she's doing well. She does have certain limitations because of the disease in her ability to communicate, short-term memory, and even the what we call executive function, being able to plan and process and follow steps through something. So that makes it hard for her. So she's not able to do as much as she used to do in the past. But we do support her in every way we can and try to find ways to laugh and do different things and have family dinners. And, you know, we – living in Atlanta for the last 10 years and being away from Rochester for 20, my parents never really had a great opportunity to spend time with Megan and Justin. So we can do Sunday dinners now, which we didn't do for – 20 years. So that's been a nice positive, I guess, of us coming back mm-hmm. to town.
And Megan, what are you doing now? Tell me your mindset now. I so admire you, the way you talk about it and everything that I've heard about you. So tell me what you are doing now about it.
At the Alzheimer's Association, we've started a teen support group So that should be getting up and starting in October. And we're welcoming anybody, not just people that have, like, family members, like moms, their dads, or grandparents, but even if it's, like, a close family friend, like, anybody who's has any loved one dealing with Alzheimer's, it's good for them to come here. We're trying to get the ages between 13 and 17, so it's at more of a mature level. And we're trying to, like, get people so they can freely come and talk and be heard and learn about more about the disease.
Well, and I think that's leads to an interesting question. You've written about it, you've presented in class about it, now you're doing this, creating a support group, reaching out to others. Does talking help you? And do you think it will help others?
Well, it's helped me. I've been to many meetings at the Alzheimer's Association, and it's really helped me kind of take this by stride. I, like, have gotten so much information from the Alzheimer's Association, and I feel like it's really helped.
I'm amazed, Teresa. I mean, I can't even imagine. I know that that you probably feel the same way about her.
I admire the Norton family, and I aspire to be as courageous as Megan is. She has such a wonderful spirit about her. She helps to remind us that there's hope. There's hope for the Alzheimer's Association. There's hope for the disease. There's hope for our future. And every time I speak to her and I get opportunity to spend with her and her family, it just makes me go back and feel like we are going to keep this fight going, and we're going to work even harder to take this disease out so that Megan and her friends don't have to, that hopefully in the future when they're adults, that Alzheimer's disease will be just a distant memory for them.
Jen on Twitter says, Megan is amazing. Keep fighting. We're with you. Nice to hear stuff like that, I know. And there's some events coming up here. In fact, throughout the region, walks and events coming up, starting, I think at least the list I see starts on September 13th coming up here. So, Teresa, why don't you kind of take us through what's coming up?
Yeah, well, you know, in order to be able to do the work we do, we have to raise money. And the resources are limited, but we have an incredibly generous community, as you know. And we have a season of walks. We have six coming up, three in September, three in October, and they kick off on September 13th in Canandaigua and go from there. And as a matter of fact, Megan has a team, Hugs for Mom, as she mentioned earlier, and her team will be walking on the 20th of September in Mendon, and she's got a whole crew going. And she can talk a little bit about how she's raising the money, but her family has just gone over the top of their goal. But our goal this season is to raise over $400,000.
Wow.
So we've got a ways to go.
All right, a couple of things. If they want to get a list, if people want to see a list of dates for that and events, where do they go?
They go right to our website, alz.org/RochesterNY. They can sign up to walk, to donate, to have a team, all kinds of neat stuff. It's all right there, jam-packed on our website.
Megan, what are you doing to put a team together?
Well, we started trying to think of a name. Hugs for Mom kind of came up because it is my mom who's been diagnosed. But we've got our T-shirts coming on the way, so we're trying to get that going. And I've kind of just contacted my friends and family. So they've been the ones that started the donations, the joining my team. And we're walking the September 20th walk at Mendon Ponds Park. So it's kind of, I guess, we just raised money from the fact that my family and friends have helped.
We've had some very generous friends, but friends from Atlanta, friends from that I've developed through work over the years have supported us. The company I work for has matched donations, which has been a very great benefit for us. Megan wanted to design a T-shirt, so we came up with a Hugs for Mom team name and have a T-shirt in the works that we're hoping to sell as well that will help us take those net proceeds and put them towards the team's fundraising goal as well.
This is a good chance for you to remind our listeners, if they want to find you online, where can they go?
The team name is Hugs for Mom. So at the Alzheimer's website, when you look to donate, if you want to join the team, people can join the team. They can also donate the team by just typing in Hugs for Mom.
Mm-hmm.
We probably don't have a huge online presence at the moment. I have a Facebook page that just has some information that I've put up about Alzheimer's and some different things about the walk. That may be something down the road that maybe we take into a greater level. And we've talked about on the back of our shirts, we have hashtag Hugs for Mom, and wondering if that's a way to kind of go viral with pictures of everybody hugging their moms and celebrating who your mom is and what they mean to you.
Love that idea. Let's grab a phone call. This is Kathy in Rochester. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi, my name is Kathy Harris, and I'm a facilitator at Alzheimer's for support groups. And I'm just calling to say that I would encourage anyone who is interested in supporting folks who are dealing with this illness to think about volunteering. It's just a wonderful experience, and you don't have to have any special skills except to be able to really listen and connect with people, and the people in the groups support each other and get to know each other. And I am also going to be co-facilitating the new teen group. So I do know Megan, and I've been working with her, and she is lovely, and Brian is terrific. And I'm just saying a shout out to everybody out there. If you're thinking about what a good volunteer activity is, something that's really meaningful, just consider doing this, because it's wonderful, it doesn't take a lot of time, and it will give you much more than it takes from you. And that's all I just wanted to say. Thank you for the show.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you very much. Megan, you want to weigh in on some of what she said there?
Well, she is going to be the co-facilitator of my teen group that we are starting. So it's kind of what she's kind of saying is we need to get this thing up and running. We need to start getting teens to speak out and come to the Alzheimer's Association and start coming to this teen group. And I feel like it'll be very helpful for anybody who really is going through something like this.
Yeah. Great stuff. Did you want to say something?
That's because the support groups are incredible. I mean, we came here not really knowing anybody other than old acquaintances and things of that sort, and turned to the Alzheimer's Association, got into a support group that I go meet with once a month. And honestly, I look forward to it every month to be around other people who know what you're dealing with, and you can talk about some of the things that are going on. You leave every meeting feeling positive. And if it works for me, it's certainly going to work for Megan and her peers.
Let's grab another call. This is Allison in Canandaigua. Allison, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I'm just a quick call to say that I am a caregiver and an elder caregiver. And I highly recommend, if people don't know the book, Contented Dementia by Oliver James, which I found extremely helpful with dementia cases. And I did care for someone with early Alzheimer's, and I know that pain that people have, and I wish I had read this book then, because I find it really, really wonderful.
Allison, thank you for the recommendation. Any of our panel, Tress, have you heard of that? Have you heard of the book?
I have not, Evan, but one of the things that I think it's important, I'm glad the caller mentioned something about resources, and I know Megan touched on it, as well as Brian, that you don't have to take this journey alone, and you shouldn't take this journey alone. It's going to be painful. It's a struggle for sure, but if you are equipped with support from peers, from friends, from people who have are on the journey with you, and information and knowledge, you will feel so much more empowered. You will have a much more positive outlook, and the quality of life of not only the family members but the person with the disease themselves will be so much more greatly enhanced. And we have a library. We have the Wilson Resource Library at the Alzheimer's Association. You can borrow books and other resources. You can purchase them. There are all kinds of resources out there. Unfortunately, there's a lot of resources out there on the World Wide Web that may not necessarily be in your best interest. That's why we always encourage people to contact us directly, because we have a bona fide literature search that we do on every piece of literature that we have in the office, and we are happy to loan those out and sell them to people.
All right, we're going to take a very short break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to learn more about some of the questions that you've had on Twitter. We've seen questions already about where things are in terms of research and how things are going in terms of funding and what we need to know about Alzheimer's going forward. We've got really some remarkable guests, Brian and Megan Norton, who are here, Brian's wife Amy, dealing with early onset Alzheimer's, and Megan, just an amazing teenager, talking about her mom, and Teresa Galbier is the president and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association of Rochester and the Finger Lakes region. Short break, and more as we come back here on Member Supported Public Radio. I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. Can't say enough good things about our panel as we talk about Alzheimer's. I really can't say anything good about our engineer, Dave Campo, who just ran the wrong promo for tomorrow's program. Dave is frequently late. He is not generally engaged. He's not a very nice person. He doesn't like kittens. There's not a whole lot you can say. That's actually true. Dave's a fabulous guy. We had some a bit of a back and forth confusion about Friday. That's the host's fault. It's Innovation Friday tomorrow. And if you don't know the Innovation Trail, go to WXXI.org. The Innovation Trail is really a partnership among public radio stations all over New York State. Our editor, Matthew Leonard, does a fabulous job putting together Innovation Friday, the fourth Friday of every month, and I'm excited to co-host with him tomorrow. All right, Campo, you're off the hook. We're talking about Alzheimer's disease. If you want to share your thoughts, questions, experiences, et cetera, the number's toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or right here in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And it's at Evan Dawson on Twitter. You can follow us online there, whether you're listening perhaps on WXXI Radio, 1370 AM in the Rochester region, or throughout the Finger Lakes, 89.5 FM on Finger Lakes Public Radio, WEOS, or on the WXXI mobile app. Maybe you're sneaking in some connections at work. We always love to hear that as well. Teresa Galbier, the president and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association of Rochester and the Finger Lakes region, are you amazed by what the Ice Bucket Challenge is doing for ALS? And are you a little jealous?
A little jealous? Oh my goodness, I wish we had thought of it. I'm kicking myself all day long.
Well, no one knows what ends up going viral, but wow.
That's right. And as a matter of fact, just a little total aside, Barbara Newhouse, who is the present CEO of the ALS Foundation of America, is an old colleague of mine and a good friend of the Alzheimer's Association. She worked at the national office for many, many years. And I am really proud of the accomplishments that ALS is having. And I hope that it can gain the steam and keep that steam going for that foundation. That's my hope, is that this can continue on to promote awareness for a cause that is badly needs awareness.
Well, and you know what? Interestingly, Teresa, I've talked to some friends who are concerned that the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge is so successful that it's to the detriment of other causes. And I don't see it that way.
You know, I've heard that too, Evan. But frankly, first of all, Americans are a generous society. So you're going to have that generosity out there anyways. There are a lot of good causes. Of course, we are always vying for resources that are limited. But frankly, I celebrate what ALS is doing right now. And I'm right behind them 100%. I've got my children, my family members who have participated. They tried to get me to do the ice bucket, and I said, no, I don't think so. But I really believe that there is enough to go around. And we all have these diseases, these causes that need this type of attention.
Yeah,
frankly.
Absolutely. And by the way, that challenge started off as just a general charity challenge. And you see a lot of people who are, sometimes they'll do ALS and another. That's what I did in my video. I chose a second organization to give to. And so I don't think there's any limits. If you want to be charitable at any time. Megan, have you done the ice bucket thing?
Yes, I have done the ice bucket.
Did you enjoy it?
It was cold because I had to do it twice because my dad did not videotape it the first time.
Oh, Dad.
Yes, technically limited my abilities.
Brian, wow. I mean, that's the most important thing, is you get somebody who doesn't make a mistake with the recording of it. Doing it twice. Okay. Are you, I mean, now here you are, 15 years old, and your heart is in raising money for Alzheimer's research. Are you amazed watching what's going on for ALS? It happens, it just feel like in 2 weeks it's just exploded.
Well, I think it's really cool how the Ice Bucket Challenge started with one person, and it's gotten celebrities into it. They've gotten everybody into this. And I'm hoping with what my dad said, the hashtag Hugs for Mom gets that same recognition that the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge did.
Hugs for Mom. Hashtag Hugs for Mom. We're going to do our best to make that go viral, and that be the next thing. And the one thing that has irked me a little bit about the Ice Bucket Challenge is I could pick out a few names. Matt Lauer, for example, he did 3 minutes on it. Never mentioned ALS. Barely mentioned charity. It was more about sort of goofing around. And you know, my thoughts always: if you want to do it, but donate, and then maybe try to actually absorb some awareness and get involved. I mean, you know, my friend Jay Levine in Philadelphia has said, find something in the world that bothers you, because there's so many things that should bother us, and then throw your heart at it. And if it's ALS, okay. If it's Alzheimer's, okay. If it's homelessness or poverty or hunger, okay. But find something and throw your heart at it. And a lot of the times, it's something that's very personal to us, and I guess that's natural, right, Brian? I mean, you feel that's probably a natural thing.
Absolutely, and it's taking, I guess, what could be a negative or allowing something to, I guess, almost become a victim of a disease and finding a way to turn it around and turn it into something and take that emotional stress, the fear and the anger and all that, and really finding a way to channel it into something positive and into a mission. And before this, did we have a mission? You know, I don't think so. I think, like everything, we found organizations to donate to. We supported some friends in Atlanta whose kids had cancer. Mm-hmm. But since we've landed here and since being involved with the Alzheimer's Association, this really does seem like it's the right thing to do.
And so, Teresa, again, you mentioned $400,000, but give me a sense for more about that goal and how it gets fleshed out and where the money ends up going, et cetera.
Well, a portion of the money, of course, is going to stay local to provide the resources that we need to deliver the programs and services that families like the Nortons are participating in. But a portion of that money also goes to research. And that's the linchpin of hopefully a future without Alzheimer's disease. Because right now, Alzheimer's is the sixth leading cause of death in this country. If you think about that, that's staggering. It is the only disease in the top 10 that has no cure, no prevention, and no treatment. Many of these other diseases are showing decreases in numbers. You're talking about heart disease and cancer and other things. Alzheimer's disease is on a trajectory right now. If we don't stop this in its tracks, it's going to take this country by storm. In the next 10 to 15 years, you're talking about 15 million Americans will be living with Alzheimer's disease. And that is just staggering. And you're talking about the baby boomer generation, greatest risk right now. We turn 65, boom, we start ending up with the odds of getting the disease continue to increase. And the only way to cure, to prevent, and to treat a disease is to have dollars to support that, to find a cure. And the United States Congress has been modestly supporting Alzheimer's for a while now. And they've shown some level of increase over the last year or two. But the Alzheimer's Association itself is the single greatest funder of research for Alzheimer's disease in this country outside of the federal government. And so we're doing our part to raise this money so we can help support the disease.
Okay, and pardon some ignorant questions now, but you mentioned the fact that you turn 65 and the numbers, the odds start to change for people.
That's correct.
Right?
That's correct.
Okay, the fact that our life expectancy is increasing, that means more of us are living with better quality of life later in life. Does that mean more of us will end up with Alzheimer's?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Your odds of getting Alzheimer's will continue to increase. When you're 65, it's about 1 in 8 Americans. When you get to 85, it's close to 1 in 2. And think about the tragedy of that.
That's
yep,
amazing.
Because not only is one person going to have the disease, but then you've got the caregivers. So you're talking about every person in this country will have a reason to end Alzheimer's disease at some point.
That is amazing. That's again, the world has been talking about ALS for the last 2 weeks, and caregivers cannot be forgotten. whether it's ALS, Alzheimer's, et cetera. And I want to talk to Brian about this and frankly, Megan as well. I mean, you know, you guys are such a strong family. It's amazing. But give us as much as you can or you're willing. Give me a sense for some of the challenges for caregivers.
There's definitely challenges. I think the biggest challenge is that there is no clear road of where this disease goes. It's different for every individual. It affects each person differently, and you certainly see certain hallmarks or symptoms of what happens, but how and when they happen, there's no telling. I think the biggest challenge, and Teresa and I were speaking about it before we came in, is we often think about the individual with the disease and that they associate losing their memory as being part of the disease, and that's horrible. But until we started living with this disease, that's really what you are. You're living with the disease as a family, and you don't know from one day to the next, is today a good day or a bad day? Is today a good moment or a bad moment? So the effect on the family and the care partners with the individual, it consumes your life. From the minute you wake up, whether it's being, you know, just helping direct my wife to certain things or reminding her maybe of something that she had just forgotten or not being aware of what it is that she is trying to accomplish. Knowing when the mood changes come. They happen out of the blue for any number of reasons. And like with Amy's case where she doesn't communicate as much as she used to, we're having to kind of go through a list of what ifs and try to ask her what is wrong and how is she feeling? Does she need something? And trying to really troubleshoot based on, you know, I guess how you would sometimes with a young infant who doesn't communicate either and trying to figure out exactly why, you know, that little baby or toddler is upset.
Brian Norton's wife, Amy, was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's at the age of 43, about 18 months ago. And Megan, their daughter, is here as well, 15 years old. And again, we've been saying all hour, really doing remarkable things in the wake of getting this diagnosis for her mother. So for you, your dad talked about even mood changes. Do you simply learn as a family that when the mood changes come, you know, Brian talked earlier this hour about the fact that you looked back before the diagnosis and almost felt guilty, that you'd get frustrated or I didn't understand this. Now you know, but you still have to deal with the mood changes, et cetera. What's that like for you?
I feel like it's gotten easier over the last 18 months. Before, we didn't really know how to deal with it and how to take her mood changes. But now we're kind of, like, adapted to it. So when a mood change happens, I know right away what I need to ask her, what I need to try to get for her. But my little brother, Justin, doesn't really understand that yet. So it's kind of like responsibility has been put a lot on me because my dad is at work and my brother doesn't really know what he's doing. So it's nice having the family support around.
And in a sense, you have to just really accept, I'm not going to blame her for this. Or I'm not going to, you know, and I've seen it in our family with other, you know, I think most of us have dealt with dementia or Alzheimer's with someone in our families or unfortunately or will, as Teresa says, as we go forward. And Brian, you really just have to sort of kind of part with that anger as best you can or frustration mm-hmm. as best you can.
You do. And I mean, I have to say I have learned how to be much more patient than I may have been a couple years ago, maybe a little less selfish. In a lot of ways, as Megan's laughing about patience, it teaches you something. You know, you have no control. Getting angry, getting mad doesn't accomplish anything. Amy needs our help. She needs our support. We're there for her. That's, you know, we took a vow when we got married, and that's my role.
And as a caregiver, you mentioned working. You know, there are probably days where you wake up and, like you said, you don't know if it's a good or a bad day. There are probably occasions where you have to kind of drop other things, don't you, and try to find a way to deal with work through that.
Yes. I mean, work can be an outlet to some extent, but it is, I guess it goes along with learning that patience. My wants, my game plan for doing something, whether it be in the yard or Trying to, you know, stay late at work don't always come first. And if Amy has a need at the moment or is something's going to get off schedule because of some things we're doing, then that's what we have to do.
Now, Brian, you mentioned when you were in Atlanta and you spoke to a neurologist and you kind of put that game plan together. You talk about what you can do for your wife and her Alzheimer's, but, you know, Teresa says there's no real I think you said no treatment. Essentially, there's essentially no treatment, but are they trying certain things? I mean, can you walk me through some of that?
Sure. I would say there's the usual medication that individuals with the disease will prescribe, and I guess there's various different medications. They work to an extent. They work only for a certain amount of time. We don't really know how well they work because we don't know what Amy would be like without the medication, and
sure,
we're not willing to take that chance. But there's all kinds of clinical trials that exist, and through the Alzheimer's Association, you can link up with all the different clinical trials that exist out there. We haven't, at this point, gone down that road. I think really this first year was kind of getting acclimated and getting Megan and Justin taken care of and getting us all in a good place. But there's always that option of, you know, what do clinical trials hold and are they worth, you know, jumping in and seeing what we can do.
Well, let's talk to Teresa then. Teresa Galbier, the president and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association of Rochester and the Finger Lakes region, about where we are. I mean, you gave us a bit of a grim picture. I mean, no real treatment and certainly no cure. Is there anything that offers the kind of promise that has you and researchers excited?
Yes, absolutely. As a matter of fact, we're coming off of the International Conference on Alzheimer's Disease that took place last month in Copenhagen. And there were over 4,000 scientists from around the world who all convened, and they do this annually. And they talk about some of the research that they're doing. One of the things that came out, there were a couple of things that were pretty exciting. One is they were looking at the vision and the eye, and are there ways to perhaps diagnose through the eye itself, through ocular vision. And so there are some diagnostic tests that are showing promise. The Rochester Aging Study is another one where they actually have designed a blood test that can determine whether or not there's the precursor genes for somebody to be able that will that they perhaps could get Alzheimer's disease.
Is that what Dr. Mark Mapstone?
Yep, that's okay. The team right here at the University of Rochester,
okay,
Medical Center.
Because we've talked to him before. I know Second Opinions talked to him.
Yep.
And that headline, I think it's sometimes in the media we have to be careful because we want so badly,
right,
to have the headline, you know, blood marker for Alzheimer's discovered, you know, or
that's right,
DNA test discovers Alzheimer's, you know, or a prediction of Alzheimer's, et cetera. And I know we're not quite there yet, but remind our listeners of the potential significance of what Dr. Mapstone and that team are doing.
That's incredibly significant because there has never been anything before that could help you to determine perhaps the course of this disease. People might say, well, why would you want to know? Well, we do want to know. We want to know because there are lifestyle changes you perhaps can make. We're not saying you can prevent or change the course of a disease, but perhaps there are some risk factors that are already in place. We talk about our numbers if we pay attention to our cholesterol or blood pressure. Those types of things that are good for the heart are also good for the brain. And if we have particular lifestyle things that we can change, we could at least guarantee a healthier lifestyle. We can't guarantee that perhaps we're going to get the disease or not, but there are lifestyle things that you can do for brain wellness, strategies like that. The other thing about knowing about the fact that there is a test that might come down the road, and it's not for public consumption yet. It's going to be probably a few years before you can actually go to a doctor's office and get the blood tests from your doctor and be able to say that with some certainty that perhaps you have the precursor to the Alzheimer's disease gene. But that's helpful because as treatments might come down the road concurrently, then perhaps that the treatments can take place. As Brian said, there are only 5 Alzheimer's drugs on the market today. I mean, that's deplorable. When you're talking about drugs for cancer and other types of diseases, there's hundreds of them, but there's literally only 5. And as he also said, we don't know if, in fact, what kind of effect it might be having on Amy, but we want to believe that it is. So we continue with that treatment, mm-hmm, that regime of treatment. But what's exciting is that even though, and you talk about some of the sensationalism of tests that have come out, and they have all these wonderful studies that have said that there's results, perhaps those are the cores of the way that we might be able to go, that there could be some promise to that. There's also been a lot of failed clinical trials. Some might say that's a shame. It's not. The more failures you have, you check them off a list, that leads you maybe to the discovery. And there is great hope in the scientific community today. They're saying in the next 5 years, there's going to be a breakthrough. And we really do believe it. There's some momentum being built. There's a lot more money being put into the research. And right here in Rochester, we have some basic science going on Alzheimer's disease.
Well, we had a question from Tina on Twitter that I think will help lead us to a follow-up to the points you just made. She just asked in general, what are the main causes and is it genetic? So first, real briefly, is it genetic?
There can be a genetic predisposition to Alzheimer's disease. Absolutely. There are some families that are studied around the world where they have just dozens of family members who have been affected by the dozens of first-generation family members. So there could be. That's more rare. Right now, the familial disease is not as common as this, what they call sporadic, where it just happens and they can't determine why.
And when she asks what the main causes are, first, let's answer that as best we can, and then I have a follow-up based on this blood test that we've been kind of talking about. But Tina's question, what are the main causes? In broad terms, you kind of talked a little bit about it, but how would you answer that?
I'm not a scientist, but from what we know, that there are some genes that could actually be predisposed. There's something called APOE4. And so there's a gene in the brain that, depending on familial, if you have two of the genes or one or whatever, I mean, it gets a little bit complicated, but there could be it's a genetic predisposition to the disease. Yes.
Okay. So the follow-up to that is, let's say that Dr. Mapstone's team develops something that can become commonly used, that I can go in and get a blood test and they're looking for a marker in me that says, all right, you are essentially, I guess I would say, you're predisposed or you are kind of going down that road that eventually you could develop or more likely to develop Alzheimer's. Is that kind of what it would say?
It could be.
Okay.
Yeah.
If that happens, let's say I'm 36 years old, hypothetically, mm-hmm. And I get that test. Can I do something that would alter the course right now without anything else coming on the market, without any other treatment? Can I change my eating, my health, et cetera, that would increase my odds of not getting it, even if I'm predisposed to getting it?
We can't say for certain, but I would absolutely encourage a change in lifestyle. Absolutely. I would encourage that for someone who perhaps has high blood pressure. Vascular dementia is one of the most common dementias. Alzheimer's disease is the most common dementia, but vascular is the second. Vascular dementia is caused by a life history of high blood pressure and sometimes a poor lifestyle, which can also cause the high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and things like that. So I would absolutely recommend to anybody who perhaps had the blood test and it was determined that they might be carrying the gene, go home and come up with a whole new course of life for yourself. Absolutely. That's why we do the brain wellness strategies.
Yeah. You know, it's always a good idea to eat healthy and work out, right?
So, of course it
is. So that's true for everybody. But we can't be sure, it was what you're saying, it would head off Alzheimer's. But we don't know. There's so many variables that right now it's kind of hard to sift those out. But why not, I guess?
Right. Just like if somebody went home and said, I had COPD, I would say, well, quit smoking.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's such a logical, immediate response. But once again, I don't want it to appear that we could have perhaps changed Amy's course. That was something that you could never have predicted. And I look at this family who lives a life of incredible good health. And so it was that Russian roulette.
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at this family, Brian is built like a four iron. You know, I mean, they are very healthy people. So I guess you just don't know. And let me start to wrap the conversation with Brian and Megan. Brian, one more time for people who are just kind of tuning in, give me a sense now for what you'd like to see our community do and what you and Megan are doing.
Sure. We're here because we want that awareness to grow. It's not just a disease that affects older individuals. It affects every family. And even if it's not somebody the age of my wife, it's somebody who's older, but it has a lasting and major impact on the family as a whole. We're fortunate because we have my family who can help and my in-laws who can help us. But there's other families where the individuals are older. You know, the only caregiver may be their spouse.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine how taxing that is on that person. So it's that awareness, and it's the fundraising. It's making this into the event, the fundraising event that we do in Rochester.
And by the way, you talk about caregivers. You know, Amy's story is not that common with Alzheimer's. Most of the time it is older people. And our society now, we're a little more spread out. I mean, a generation and two generations ago, a lot of the times, you'd be in the same hometown. And your kids would be nearby, and when parents would get older, the kids could be there. That's less common today. And I think Brian's point is important there, because if your parents are far away, I don't live in the same state as my mother and father. You know, it's important for us to keep in mind what we can do to help when they're in that position. Megan, I'm so impressed with you, and I just want to just tell you that I don't know what to say other than, you know, I'm amazed with what you're doing, and I think a lot of people are going to be eager to help you and support you. And so thank you for coming in, and hopefully Rochester is comfortable for you now. It's been a little while, so
I like it up here.
Well, thank you, and Teresa, let's run down real quickly. I'm looking at the time. We got just over a minute. Run down some of the events coming up that you want people to know about.
Well, we have 6 walks coming up this fall, starting on September 13th all the way through the end of October, and we hope that people can come out. Like Brian said, have fun. We are going to be having a great time. It's like a carnival atmosphere, raising money and awareness for a cause that's badly needed.
I'm looking at the list here. Canandaigua, September 13th. Mendon, September 20th. Elmira, the 27th. Cornhill, Rochester, October 11th. Brockport, October 18th. Geneseo, the 25th. Did I hit them all? Is that right?
You got them all.
Okay. And if they want to find you online, they can go where?
ALZ.org / Rochester NY, and look for Hugs for Mom. That's a great team going on.
I really like that. You know, this is one of those things that, again, who knows what goes viral? Mm. You know, in a parallel universe, people are doing the Ice Bucket Challenge and only 50 people know about it. You know, you just never know what lights the switch. But Hugs for Mom makes sense to me. Doesn't it make sense to you, Brian?
It does. It does.
Megan, what do you? Where are they going to find it? On Twitter and on social media?
We're going to try to start it with either Instagram or Twitter. Yeah. So if you everybody just kind of go from there.
Every time an adult figures out social media, the kids go to a different social media, by the way. Are you all on Instagram, Megan? Is that right?
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Okay. I just feel like I'm just getting a hold of Facebook and Twitter, and now all the adults in the room are going, yep. Brian and Megan, thank you. Good luck to you, and thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Teresa, nice to see you here, and best of luck to you and the association.
Thank you, Evan.
Dave Campo, I reluctantly thank you for your engineering work today. I'm Evan Dawson. I'll be back here for Innovation Friday tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening to member-supported public radio.